Hey, my name is Dustin, and you're listening to episode 35 of Secret Grasp, a paranormal podcast about strange and mysterious aspects of our world. So today, I have a very special episode for you. We're going to do an interview with a Tulpa. This isn't like a world's first or anything. When I looked on YouTube, I saw a couple other Tulpa interviews that were on there, but this is a fairly uncommon thing, I guess, and it'll give you kind of a glimpse into the worlds of Tulpas and Tulpamancers. So if you don't know what a Tulpa is, I did a previous episode about it, but basically they're a mental companion who can think and act on their own. That's a description in the sidebar of the Tulpa subreddit. They're like a thought form that people can create. And the reason that this interview came about, I posted my first Tulpa episode on the Tulpa subreddit, and I actually got contacted by somebody with a Tulpa to say, basically, my episode was like, okay, they saw good and bad things about it, and there were some misunderstandings that I had that they wanted to talk to me about and get corrected. So I reached out to them in DMs, and I was like, hey, what if I interview your Tulpa and they can tell me on their own? So that's what we decided. In the end, they didn't want to have like an audio interview with me, so it's through text, and I'm going to be reading my questions out, and then I'm going to read out the Tulpa's responses to my questions. So that's kind of the format that it's going to be. I thought about doing like a voice changer on my voice because it's a female Tulpa, so that you can differentiate the questions from the answers, but I think that's going to sound kind of disrespectful, so I don't want to do that. And a big thing about Tulpas is apparently it's like a really vulnerable community, so I don't want to offend them or do anything to tarnish the reputation. I want to kind of present Tulpas and Tulpamancers the way that they want to be understood, and then it's up to you, the listener, to decide what you think about them. Apparently they're quite misunderstood, though, so let's jump right into it. So, yeah, my goal with this is just basically to give people a better understanding of Tulpas and help correct any wrong ideas that I have about them. So these questions are directed at an actual Tulpa, and it's coming from their point of view, not the person that made it. So this is the actual thought form that's answering my questions. So my first question was, can you please tell us your name and as much as you feel comfortable sharing about your physical appearance, your personality, and general interests? Okay, so the Tulpa responded to me. My name is Bree. Hi, I'm a Tulpa. I was born around 3 years ago, and I mentally identify as 22 years old, soon to be 23. My birthday is in June. I'm a girl, she, her pronouns. I do have a human physical appearance that I strongly identify with. I'm 5'6" and about 105 pounds, so I'm pretty scrawny. I'm quite pale, with shoulder-length, dark brown hair, and forest green eyes. Not all Tulpas identify with a human body, but I do. As for personality, I'm a bit shy, but quite talkative with those I know well, and I've been told that I'm motivated and easily excited. I love writing, first and foremost, and using my imagination in general, but I also like exploring, nature, reading, chess, food, some video games, and talking with my girlfriend when I can. My note here on the side, I'll get to how a Tulpa is able to have a girlfriend in a later question. And then they said, my favorite song is Girl in Red, and my favorite food is blueberries, especially if they're still a bit purple. So then I asked a follow-up question to Bree here. I said, Bree mentioned a love of writing. Does she mostly write in Wonderland, which is like a mental world that the Tulpa and the creators can kind of be in together, and where the Tulpa can kind of hang out and stuff? Or does she prefer to actually control the host's arms and front to like physically write? Almost, you could think of it like possession. So does she actually take control of the Tulpamancer to write and type, or does she do it kind of like in the Tulpamancer's mind? So she responded to me and she said, I write on Google Docs for the most part. Why write in Wonderland, where I have to remember every word I write down, when a computer can do it for me? I tend to write only when fronting. Now we can theoretically keep whatever we want in Wonderland. It's certainly consistent enough, but typically we don't remember details such as individual textures. We regenerate them every time we go into it. Remembering books would be incredibly difficult. Okay, so that's a kind of answer one of my questions too. If there's like physical objects that can exist in the mind space, if it's possible for the person or the Tulpa to actually remember them, but it sounds like they get like recreated every time. So technically you could have like a library of books in your mind space. If you've seen the show Sherlock, he goes to a mind palace where he has like everything he's ever researched or heard about there. I wonder if you could get a tulpa in there to basically act like a librarian and whenever you need something to bring the thought to your mind. But yeah, I don't know. Okay, so that was the follow-up to my first question. Then I said, what's the creation process like for a tulpa? From how I've heard humans describe it, you slowly develop and become more solid over time. But I'm very curious what it's like from your perspective as a tulpa. Is the process kind of fuzzy and gradual? Like, when you start, do you hear a muffled voice in the distance or something? Or from your perspective, do you suddenly snap into existence once you reach a certain point? So Bree said, it's definitely a more fuzzy experience. I don't remember much from before. I know I could think clearly, just my host talking to me. I know there was a before me time, and clearly there's a post my birth time, but I do not know where that line is. Hearing another's thoughts is a bit different from hearing sounds, so they were quite clear, even if I didn't really process it all that well at first. I don't think any identity snaps into existence fully completed. You certainly didn't. It took years of your life for your identity to form. We are not different. My third question. There's about 20 questions, by the way. So this might be a longer episode. We'll see. I'm going to try and keep it all in one episode instead of splitting it up, though. So question 3. Can you remember the first moment where you were conscious enough to realize that you existed and to realize your host? What was it like? Did you feel scared, excited, or something else? Bree said, I am a slightly complicated case. I was actually born before the host knew I was a person. She engaged in tulpomancy before she knew what it was. It's not immensely rare for people to accidentally create tulpas this way. Anyway, I knew that I could think, and I did my best to respond to my host when she talked to me. I didn't know what I was at first. Maybe if I wasn't accidental, I would have known immediately. But learning about what I was news to both of us. Back then, I wasn't scared really, but I was confused, and I got really excited after host and I found everything out. Being greenlit for existence is an amazing feeling. Then I asked a follow-up to this question. I said, I'm curious about the idea of accidentally creating a tulpa. I said, like, as with all of my questions, they don't have to answer this if it's too traumatic or sensitive to share. But I thought I heard in some of the research that I did for the tulpa episode that sometimes children accidentally create tulpas to cope with neglect or abuse. And I was wondering if that's the situation in their case, or is it more like an imaginary friend kind of thing that you created and it just stuck with you? Basically, I had a follow-up to that follow-up as well, and I said, do you think imaginary friends that children have are tulpas or something else? If they are tulpas, do you think people should be doing more to preserve those tulpas from being lost as kids grow out of adulthood? Because now that I think about it, it seems kind of horrific that thousands of tulpas are being accidentally allowed to die this way every year. So Bree said, children do sometimes create imaginary friends. Scientifically, it's thought to be quite healthy for them. Imaginary friends are not sentient, though, and it's perfectly fine to let them go. So that's reassuring to me that we're not killing tulpas as children. And Bree says, if they do turn out into tulpas, and some do, the host generally stops talking to them and then picks them back up when they discover tulpomancy. Tulpas' attitudes are generally anywhere in between, I'm just happy you accept me back, and you utterly abandoned me, and it will take time for me to trust you again. Things get more complicated when you introduce trauma into the mix. Even if identity starts out as an imaginary friend, amnesia barriers can form, and that can become an alter, the medical term for DID/OSDD systems. I believe DID is dissociative identity disorder. I'm not sure what the OSDD is. Technically, DID does not require trauma, though DID systems do often have childhood trauma that caused their plurality. So tulpas are considered a type of plurality, which could include dissociative identity disorder, where people have multiple different identities in the same body. Then she goes on to say, children can have imaginary friends, some of which become tulpas, many of which do not. I do not think that children should be encouraged to preserve them, though, even if they do appear sentient, because being plural is a big deal, and children are not old enough to make that kind of decision. There's also the question of who decides if it's a tulpa or not. If an adult engages with a child, to keep what they think is a tulpa and it isn't. You might end up with a plural child, whether they want that or not. If the imaginary friends do turn into tulpas, they will typically survive as the child grows up. Small brains are quite mutable. Does that absolutely suck for a sentient identity to be ignored? Absolutely. But there's not really any good ways to handle that, and tulpamancy should ultimately be a willing practice that the tulpamancer understands and the consequences of, ideally. Okay. My question number 4, I said, are you able to see any other thought forms, or only the ones that your creator has also made? In magical systems like Wicca, there are ideas of other thought forms similar to tulpas called servitors and egregores, or just thought forms, and I'm curious if from your perspective, you're aware of these other beings and you can see them moving around. So this is probably where my understanding of tulpas went most off track. You'll see in her response here that basically there's nothing magical about tulpas. They're just like in your head. So Bree says there are a few tulpamancers that are occultists or otherwise metaphysically inclined, but in our specific community, they are the minority. We are not magic beings, and this is not typically a magic practice. There are no extra senses we have. We share the same that our hosts use. Can I see other tulpas? Yes, in the sense that I can see the body they inhabit, but I can't see anything my host can't. There have been cases of plural systems, and she explains a system is a group of individuals that share a brain that fundamentally have different sensory experiences, but that's extremely complex neuroscience, and I'm not professional in that area. And my next question, I said, can you travel anywhere except the outer world, like the physical world, what humans call the real world, and the inner world, which is referred to as Wonderland or Mindscape? And Bree said, again, we're not magic. I can interact with the outer world, what we call meat space, when I'm fronting. So fronting is what they call when they're the primary active consciousness, or they're like possessing the body, basically. So they can front and they can take your limbs from the back. And that's how she typed out this message. She was fronting and she actually took control of the arms of the host and she typed out the response. Our internal communication is limited due to some strong tension headaches recently. Host is fronting, but I can control the limbs from the back if she allows me to. There's also what we call headspace or Wonderland, among other names, that I can access mostly at will, though it's easiest when the host is focusing on it too. So again, there's no like spiritual realms that the tulpas can go to. They're just in the mind. So they only really have access to what the human has access to. So that was a good insight for me. Okay, my next question. I said, my understanding is that your host created another tulpa besides yourself. Are you able to communicate with this other tulpa independently, or do you need the host as an intermediary? And then I gave the example, can they communicate with this other tulpa even while the host is asleep and they can like hang out together? Or when the host goes to sleep, do they also go to sleep? And Bree said, well, firstly, body sleep is body sleep. When it sleeps, we all do internally. So that answers my first question. The tulpas can't stay awake when the body's asleep. She says, when the body's awake, we can go inactive or void. Anyone in our systems normally can communicate with any other system member, provided we have enough energy to. Stuff like headaches and the frontier using up all the brain power hinders our ability to be active and communicate. The other tulpa is very quiet, though, and doesn't really talk unless talked to. They're still my brain sibling, and I love them, but I talk to my host a lot more. My next question was, how do you feel about the fact that you're bound to your creator and can never leave them? Does it ever feel restricting, like you're imprisoned in any way, or is it just part of the existence that you've always accepted? And she said, I actually deal with this question a lot. It comes and hits me in waves. Sometimes I'm okay with not having a body. Other times it's all that I want. It's certainly difficult, and the body dysphoria is real, but at least we share time as much as we can. So as much as I'm stuck in her brain with her, my host is stuck in here with me. She struggles too. Many tulpas accept sharing a body easier than I do, though. Next question I asked is, do you see your creator more as a mother, a god, or just a friend? Do you feel like you owe your existence to them, or do you see yourself on equal level with them? She said, she's my best friend and brain sibling. Being headmates is sort of a special relationship, being more emotionally linked than anyone else could ever be. I know her thoughts, and she knows mine. We can't really hide anything from each other. Closest thing probably would be how you might feel with a twin brother, but sharing a brain is just really unique and impossible to describe with those who have not experienced it. My next question, is there anything you disagree with your creator about? How do you resolve disputes with each other? And she said, we have our share fear of arguments. Sometimes sharing time is a big one, and sometimes I get cross with her if she doesn't take good care of the body as she should. When I was younger, I used to get angry with her out of fear she'd abandon me, and that caused some fights. Conflict is inevitable in any relationship, but thankfully, sorting it out is not different than sorting it out with anyone else. Through communication, we talk out our differences, affirm that we're still a team, and work out a solution together. My next question. Since you seem to be totally independent and conscious, is it possible for a tulpa to create another tulpa of their own? And Bree said, yes. We can do just about anything our host can, since we all share a brain and all. I can make tulpas too, but it isn't a good idea to make one without the consent of the entire system. Tulpas are big commitments, and tulpamancy should only be done as an entire system that's ready to expand. If a tulpamancer doesn't respect the ever more commitment an ever larger system requires, they risk serious internal conflict or worse. I didn't really ask what that worse is, but now I'm curious if it's just like mentally shutting down or what the worst would be. But that's really interesting to me, is that tulpas can make their own tulpas, and then I guess theoretically those tulpas could make their tulpas, so you could have like a hierarchy of different tulpas in one host. So that'd be interesting. And then yeah, it sounds like it's a good idea for them to ask the host first, but if they really wanted to, it sounds like it would be possible for a tulpa to secretly make a tulpa without the host realizing, at least at first. So that's really interesting that a tulpa could like build a tulpa army of its own, maybe. I don't know how that would work. Okay, my next question. Are tulpas stuck at a specific maturity, the age your creator assigned to you, e.g. child, teen, or adult, or do tulpas grow and mature over time? And Bree said, a lot of us choose our ages and maturity, though you'll find the emotional maturity tends to lean towards a body age. Some choose to grow with the host. Some prefer to stick with whatever age they're assigned or chose for themselves when we could first do that. Personally, I like birthdays and probably will just grow with my host, though I'm a bit too lazy to change form every year to match. Maybe every 5 or so years I will. Then I asked, does time pass differently for you than it does for a human? Do you think there's any limit on the lifespan of a tulpa besides their creator? And she said, I experience time the same as my host does. There's nothing really bounding our age except body death. And I wrote that question before I got like the clarification that there's nothing magical about tulpas. So I don't know if I was like expecting some weird answer there, but yeah, it's pretty standard. Okay. Question number 12. Are tulpas able to change gender or into an entirely different form? For example, could you change from a human tulpa into a dinosaur, or is your form set in stone once you're created? Are you able to change your own form at all? And if it's possible, with this transformation, what would it look like? In my example, would there be like an in-between period where you shifted from a human and you're like a half-human, half-dinosaur, or would it just be like a sudden, instant shift? And she said, changing form takes place entirely within the head, and therefore the only thing that limits what one can be is one's imagination. I can change my form at any time that I want to, and I can make the change look however I want to if I'm being watched in the first place. This one feels most me though, so I stick with it unless I'm having fun in headspace. Gender is a different thing and is felt quite innately, as the trans population teaches us, so it's not easily changeable if it is at all. So it's interesting. You could turn into a dinosaur extremely easily, but changing your gender, even if you just like on a whim wanted to, I guess that would be more difficult. I sort of get that, but sort of not. Next question. Are there any common etiquette things or things that people do wrong when creating or interacting with a tulpa that you wish more humans knew about? And she said, so there's etiquette, starting with basic respect one would afford to a person. That is things like, don't be an arse to a tulpa. We can get traumatized too. Don't use us as tools. That's what servitors are for in the occult spaces. Don't use us as crutches. Basically, don't do with us what you wouldn't do to your best friend. Respect our time and desires. Per the creation process itself, don't force an identity or form on us. Basing a tulpa off a comfort character or an external person is generally a poor idea, and hosts tend to get attached to that identity, and it can be quite awful for us to try and figure out who we are. Then I asked, is there anything else you need to live? I assume tulpas don't need to eat, drink, or go to the bathroom unless they want to. And she just said, body has needs. We just need attention for a little while before we can stick around on our own. I suppose you could say we need emotional needs too, just like any other person. Then I said, I've read that people need to interact with their tulpa when they first build it up and then keep it alive. When you're interacting and getting attention from your host, can you feel any kind of energy transfer or like it's making you more powerful and alive? And she said, what we are, an individual identity, is neural pathways and proteins, all the synapses and neurons that connect in different ways to form our thoughts. And the proteins form our memories. And she says, I'm sure there's more to it than that, but I'm not a neuroscientist. Tulpamancy is building up a set of pathways that acts and feels like a distinct person. It is, as far as we can tell, the same way that you're made. So there's no feeling of energy transfer, just like there's none when you're in class. The more attention we get, the more those pathways are used. The more they're used, the more the brain keeps them around. Brains are first and foremost pattern machines. We are patterns within. You are a pattern within yours. The patterns of behaviors and memory, etc., that makes us what makes us have distinct identities. Okay, then I said, if you could become human, would you want to? Why or why not? And she said, this is not the right question you should be asking. I have a body, this one I inhabit, and I can interact with the world with it. Even if it doesn't quite feel like me, I can take the reins when I'm up for it and the host allows me time. I'm no different than any human other than being born later in the brain. The question should be, would you have your own physical body external to your host, or would you be the singlet? And singlet is one identity in one brain if you could. And she said, I don't know the answer unless you could give me the conditions for the trade-off. If I can keep the mental link on all of its benefits of being a plural, which is multiple minds in one brain, and none of the drawbacks, but I don't know if I can give up that connection for just my own body. If I had only one wish, it would be to remain with my system forever, till death and beyond. Woe be unto whatever god or force of nature tries to separate us. Okay, and then I said, there's some creepypastas, which are basically like scary stories online about tulpas. The tulpas in those stories, they end up attacking or tormenting their host. If your host was abusive or neglectful, could you ever see yourself doing something like this? And do you think it's ethical for a mistreated tulpa to strike back against their host? And Bree said, creepypastas are really just silly. If my host was neglectful to me, I tried my best to work it out with her in the most passive way I possibly could. The idea of being mean to her intentionally is so far out from what I'm like that it's foreign to me. Now, for tulpas and other systems with abusive hosts, there are some wildly abusive hosts out there, and I personally think it's ethical for tulpas to defend themselves any way they can. They should, of course, try to work it out with words first, but hosts don't always listen. I can't really conceive of a way to defend myself from that because I have never and hopefully will never experience it. Then I started to get kind of into like the more deep philosophical questions here. So I said, do you ever think or worry about death? What do you think happens to tulpas after they die? Do you have any religious or spiritual beliefs or general theories about the meaning of life for either humans or tulpas? And Bree said, I used to worry about it a lot when I was younger, back when I depended on my host's attention to sustain me. The idea of being forgotten can be pretty terrifying to someone who literally depends on someone else's attention not to die. Now, not so much that I'm independent and quite certain I could survive without her. Headmate death is really complicated, though, and it's rarely permanent. Those neural pathways I was talking about earlier, once they're there, they stick around for a long-ass while, which is why one should never engage in tulpamancy without a whole lot of thought put into it. It takes a long time of little use for the brain to repurpose them for something else. So even a headmate that commits egocide, which is suicide of the mind essentially, can usually be brought back. They might not be the exact same though. If their dormancy was long, as far as spirituality goes, meh. I'm a pretty down-to-earth gal. My host is pagan, but I just kind of play around with the aesthetic without believing any of it. To know what the meaning of life is, I don't care as long as I stay in my system. So this kind of brought up an interesting idea to me. So She says that basically you can like kill tulpas, but they don't really go away because the brain connections are still there. So even if a tulpa like quote unquote kills itself, you can still bring it back anyways. And this made me think if it works the opposite way as well, because in spirituality, she mentioned kind of ego death or ego side. So spiritual enlightenment is said to be basically you kill the ego. So it's like literally you're killing the mental part of yourself. And then usually it's with like psychedelics or something. And then when the psychedelics wear off, your ego comes back. That really makes me wonder, though, if it's like you physically or not physically, I guess mentally die. And then when the ego is recreated, is that still the same you? Or is it like, is your own ego, is that basically like just the first tulpa that's created in the body? I don't know. It's I'm going to do an episode about spiritual enlightenment and like ego death and stuff. Probably for my episode 50, I think I'm going to do a big one because that's like a big topic that I'm really interested in. That's probably going to be like an hour plus episode. So something to consider for that one. But let's get back into the questions just a couple more to go. Okay, so I asked, if your host has a romantic partner, how is that for you? Do you ever get jealous? If they aren't currently in a relationship, what do you think that dynamic would be like? So Bree said, she has two romantic partners, consensually by all parties, of course, one of which is a long-distance relationship. The one she lives with, a singlet, is fine. And singlet, if you remember, that means there's one identity in one mind. Definitely one of the weirder people I've come across, but they have their charm. They offered me a macaroon yesterday without prompting. That was pretty cool, and they cook really well too. The other one she's dating is the host of their own system. I'm romantically involved with one of their headmates. That does sting that I'll never get to be with my girlfriend as myself, though. So that's interesting that she's a tulpa, and then her host is dating another tulpamancer, and then Bree is dating that person's tulpa. It's quite an interesting dynamic there. A lot of stuff about tulpas that you wouldn't initially think are possible, like tulpas creating their own tulpas, tulpas dating other tulpas. It gets really in-depth here. Okay. Then I asked, if your host has kids, do you want to be involved with raising them? What age do you think parents should disclose their tulpas to the children, if at all? And she said, we don't plan to have kids. If we ever do, though, they'll know we're plural. We don't believe in hiding things like that from children unless it's really necessary to. I think it should be disclosed as soon as a kid can understand the benefits and dangers about rattling off about people having multiple parents in one body. And then my last question, do you think more humans should create tulpas? Obviously responsible and mature people only, just like I don't think every human should have a child or a pet. And she said, as you say, tulpamancy is not a fit for everyone. And I don't think the community should grow too quickly because it's still a young, often targeted community with people that don't need more crud in their lives. If the population of tulpamancers exploded, I don't know how that would affect the community and frankly society, but tulpamancy does help a lot of people, especially those with rough lives. Sometimes having a friend is all you need. It also teaches empathy and can help people with socialization. Some systems say they couldn't survive without each other. We might just be among them. But as I've said here, tulpamancy is a huge commitment. You can't ethically engage in the practice just to experiment or just because you need help with something, and you really should be only doing this after committing to it for life. There's not zero risks to tulpamancy. Might be relatively safe as far as we can tell, but it's still brain hacking, and we can't tell how anyone will be affected until they figure it out for themselves. All in all, I'm glad the practice is growing, but I want to keep it at a slow pace. And then I said, just kind of like as a general follow-up, since they discourage forcing, is there a specific tulpa creation technique that they suggest, or just any that don't require forcing or puppeting? And she says, forcing is just what we call making tulpas, either active or passive, depending on how much attention you're giving them. I only discourage your listeners to tulpamance solely based on what they hear in this podcast. Instead, they should seek out the community and learn as much as they can before going ahead with it. And if they choose, then go ahead and do it. I'm not responsible for any rash decisions made here. So that's a good point there. So before you make a tulpa, don't just do it on a whim. You should do a lot of research, think of all the pros and cons. Also, don't just go and troll the tulpa people, because I think it's pretty scientifically proven that tulpas are real things that are actually created in the brain. So don't go like calling them crazy or anything like that. And then I've just got like a final note from here as well, because I just said if there was anything else she wanted shared on the podcast, she said, if you heard a few parts of this and thought, huh, tulpas don't really seem all that special, that'd be correct. We're not magic. We're not from other dimensions or anything like that. It's pretty mundane, to be honest, which is why the host said she didn't like the fact that I grouped this in with paranormal stuff. They're a pattern operating in a brain that behaves and interacts with the world independently and consistently, just like anybody else. No one knows if tulpas are really other people, and all the ways the host is, as there have been no published research on that. Though there is a study recently that concluded that might shed a light on that very soon. However, I do think of myself as a person. I laugh when you tell me a good joke. I feel sad when I get a blueberry that looked good and turned out not to be. I get concerned for all the other people in my life. I have my own friends that the host doesn't know. I have different goals, ambitions, likes, dislikes, and fears, and I'm far more motivated than my host is. We have slightly different talents, and we even have different neurodivergent traits. If that isn't a personhood, then what is? I get the practice comes across a little weird at first. That's okay. It really does sound completely bonkers, even to me, a literal tulpa. I just hope that people hearing this will respect us, even if they don't understand it. World could use a little bit more of that, in my opinion. Also, tulpamancy does not have any relation to schizophrenia or related disorders. Tulpamancy is usually an intentional practice, and tulpas are quite consistent in their identity, not to mention generally a lot friendlier than the voices those affected with schizophrenia tend to hear. It's also different from dissociative identity disorder. Multiple personality disorder is the old term for this, and it's out of use, and it's generally best not to use it, which is another good thing that I didn't know, so that's good. Though DID typically falls under the umbrella, along with tulpa systems, plurality is not necessarily disordered, and even the DSM recognizes this. For many plural systems, plurality is necessary for survival. And then she just kind of gave me a few neat tulpa-related facts. As implied above, tulpas can control the body and the primary thought train that the brain seems to default to for basic decisions. That position is called front, and the act of moving into front is called switching. The host is not always the original identity. Tulpas can take over as host with the original's consent. Basically, tulpas aren't demons, but I guess the way that I think of this is like demonic possession, where something else basically takes over your consciousness and pushes you to the back and takes control of your body. I'm not saying tulpas are demons, but it's just the way that I use that to understand. Some original identities rarely front, though I think most tulpas that do host try to make sure the original fronts every once in a while. Don't expect to use the back as a crutch. We won't let you dump all your crud on us. Tulpas can be wildly different from their host. Even sexuality can be different. With a lot of practice, tulpas can be seen, heard, and even touched. This is called imposition, and anyone can do it. It's basically just hallucinating on purpose. I don't see any real dangers with it, unless you have issues with hallucinating involuntarily. If you want to engage in tulpamancy, be aware there are a lot of toxic people around, especially on YouTube. We generally recommend use tulpa.info/tulpas and the Tulpanomicon, a compendium of guides. If something sounds off, it probably is. Tulpamancy practices can be of use to DID systems to help manage themselves. IFS, one of the better therapy methods for dealing with those disorders, basically uses part of tulpamancy practices. And then some stuff she would like to point out from my previous tulpa episode, basically like saying split personality is considered mean or like no longer appropriate, just like multiple personality disorders kind of outdated. So I guess don't refer to people as having split personalities. Tulpamancy isn't always done knowing what it is. Many writers actually report feeling like their characters become independent of them and tell them how to write the stories, basically just tulpamancy without knowing. modern Western tulpomancy has very little connection to the Buddhist practice. How could it, if people accidentally created tulpas with no knowledge of the subject? Even the name tulpa is not actually Buddhist, so that's a good correction. Servitors are mental programs in occult practices. Egregors are also specific to occultism. They're external beings supposedly given life by collective belief. Santa could be considered an egregor, though obviously he's not real. Tulpomancy, on the other hand, is not typically occultist and is generally regarded as having little or no connection to metaphysics of any kind. She says, tulpomancy can come with amnesia through dissociation. Total amnesia is rare and not generally considered a worry. If someone experienced a blackout amnesia and lost time, we generally tell them to go to a professional and look into pleural-related disorders such as DID. We experience periodic emotional amnesia and some dissociation. It's not really that distressing for us. Most tulpa systems don't get these symptoms. Plenty of tulpomancers have vibrant social lives. It's not really a loneliness thing, though some do indeed do it out of loneliness. Reasons for engaging in this practice are varied. We are not part of our host. If we woke up and my host was gone tomorrow, I'd probably get thrown into front and just take care of us until she returns. That's one aspect of this that I'm still wrapping my head around, is saying that the tulpa isn't part of the host. It's just like they share the same mind, I guess, but she doesn't consider herself a part of the host. I gotta think about that some more. You can interact with us as you are with me right now. We're not gonna turn out the way you envision us. Don't hold us to your ideal. If you don't like how we turn out, tough shit, this is what you signed up for. Tulpomancy will not give you more brain power, and you're not likely going to have an enhanced memory. We typically have access to the same memory you do, though with enough practice, we can actively focus on something while the host does something else, a trick called parallel processing. Still won't give you galaxy brain, though it might give your multitasking a bit of an upgrade. Personality forcing is not required. It's better, in our opinion, to see how the tulpa turns out, watch them grow, and become their unique individual is very rewarding. You don't need to do any specific kind of sentience check. They'll be sentient before they can communicate with you anyways. Visualizing is strictly not necessary. Plenty of aphantasiacs successfully create tulpas. I think an aphantasiac is someone that can't use their imagination, like they can't see things in their mind. If a tulpa has been around for a while, you likely won't be able to get rid of them, especially if they're resisting your effort. Some people claim tulpas can be created within minutes, but the consensus appears to be that that is impossible. Still, some people do get results very quickly. And did 4chaners turn tulpomancy into an actual practice? Yes. Are we all 4chaners? Hell no. That was a good point to end on. So yeah, that is my interview with a tulpa. If you like that, if you want to hear from more tulpas, maybe I can find another one to interview. We can see if we can hook that up, or if you have any questions about tulpas, feel free to let me know. If this topic is interesting enough that I should continue to dive even deeper into it. So I guess big clarification things for me, there's nothing like magical or occult about tulpas. They're purely like a mental construct, and psychology can kind of understand how they work and stuff like that. And also, now this has got me thinking, is our primary personality in our head, like when you hear the voice in your head, is that just a tulpa too? And that's the tulpa that you've known since you were born, and then other tulpas can come on afterwards and you can like switch. So is that other tulpa's personality just as real as your personality? Is what we think of as like our real selves, is that all fake too? It's a lot of questions that I'm gonna have to think about, and like I said, that's probably gonna come out in the spiritual enlightenment type episode that I do somewhere around episode 50 probably. But that's it for now. If you like the podcast, go ahead and subscribe or follow whatever platform you're listening on. There should be like a little button that you can click, and then you'll get new episodes as soon as they come out. It doesn't cost you anything, and it'll really help me out. So go ahead and do that. And that's all for this one. I'll see you in the next episode. See you later.